Good afternoon, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank Q1 2019 Results Investor Analyst Conference Call. At the end of this presentation, there will be questions and answers. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nnamdi Okonkwo. I'm the CEO. I welcome you to this Q1 call. I'll go straight to my comments. We commenced the financial year by sustaining our performance momentum, which led to growth in our deposits, loans, and profitability, while our efficiency ratios also improved. We closed the period with a PBT of 6.7 billion, which is a remarkable growth of 34% compared to the same period in 2018. In absolute terms, PBT grew by about 1.7 billion on the back of a 3.6 billion growth in operating income, which was higher than the 1.6 billion growth in operating expenses and 0.3 billion growth in impairment charges. We had guided for ROE of 13% for 2019 financial year. As at Q1, we are currently at 12.2%. This means that we still need to increase our quarterly run rate to be able to achieve that 13%, but we're hopeful we will. On operating expenses, it grew by 10.4% to 16.7 billion. This was mainly driven by staff costs, regulatory, and depreciation charges, which accounted for about 60% of the cost growth. However, cost income ratio declined to 68.4%, and we expect to sustain this decline as we progress in the year. On total deposits grew by 3.8% to over 1 trillion, and this is an absolute growth of 37.6 billion when compared to our December 2018 position. We finally touched the 1 trillion mark. It was driven by growth in savings, domiciliary, and time deposit products. Foreign currency deposits grew also by 8.6% to 195.2 billion. This represents 19.2% of total deposits, and low-cost deposits now constitute 80% of our total deposits. For NIM, it came in lower than expected at 5.1%. This fell behind our guidance of 6%. The drop was caused by an increase in our average funding cost and a marginal decline in our average lending rate. For savings deposits, we achieved 6.2% growth to 242.1 billion. Clearly, we are on course to record the sixth consecutive year of double-digit growth in our savings. It just reflects the numbers and results coming in from our retail strategy, which we are driving using digital channels. Talking about digital banking continues to grow to gain traction with about 43% of our customers now enrolled on the mobile/internet banking products, and over 80% of our total transactions are now done on our digital banking platforms. Risk assets grew by 13.7% to 966.3 billion naira. Four key sectors, which represent 75.7% of the growth. The sectors are manufacturing, oil and gas, downstream, transport, and loans to the agro sector. Total Stage 3 loan declined by 2.1% to 50.5 billion in Q1. This is down from 51.6 billion in 2018 financial year-end. The combination of the decline in Stage 3 loans in the transport sector and the increase in our total loan book resulted in a decline in our NPL to 4.9%, down from 5.7% in 2018 financial year. Other regulatory ratios remained above required thresholds, with capital adequacy ratio coming in at 6.5% and liquidity ratio at 37.2%. With those opening remarks, I'll call on Bola now to take us through detailed financial presentations, after which we can then take questions. Thank you.
thank you. Thank you, Namdi. I'll just go straight to the fourth slide, which just shows an overview of the bank and some of the key statistics. And then if you go to slide five, which just shows our retail and digital banking evolution. Savings is up. It's $242 billion. Digital banking continues to grow. We've got over almost 2.1 million customers on the card, and then over 2 million customers on mobile and internet banking. And then we launched our virtual assistant during the quarter, towards the tail end of the quarter, and the customer engagement and insights we've been getting from that have been very positive. You'll see that retail lending is starting to pick up again after declining for about four consecutive years, and that's an area we hope to play in this year, but not significantly from a volume from a value perspective, but in terms of volume, we'll be doing quite a bit. On slide seven, it just shows the key macro indices. Obviously, GDP growth is slower than expected. MPI rate has been cut to 13.5% from 14%. A couple of the other indices are stable, and then the oil prices are looking up, which is positive for the country. I'll go to slide nine, which just shows the key performance highlights from a revenue, asset quality, and capital adequacy ratio perspective. I think Namdi has spoken about most of these. Foreign currency loans are now 42% of the loan book. It was 41% in 2018. NPL is down to 4.9 from 5.7. A lot of that coming from the growth in the loan book and then a slight decline in the absolute NPL book. And then cost of risk is 0.5%, though impairments were up about 40% over the period, but because of the larger loan book. Slide 10 just speaks to the key drivers of the performance. Namdi has spoken about quite a bit of them. Risk asset growth, foreign currency, deposit growth, which we're using to fund the FCY transactions. And then we now convert the balance sheet at 360. As at December, it was about 358.7. On slide 11, you have a detailed breakdown of the P&L. Quarter on quarter, gross earnings were up 11.8%. A lot of that growth coming from the fee-based income, which was up 86% over the period. Digital banking fees were up about 35% on a year-on-year basis. Funding costs, there was some pressure there, so it went up 6.5%. Even though from customer deposit perspective, interest expense was up about 3.8%. So operating income was up 17.3%, OPEX 10.4% at $1.6 billion, and then impairment costs were 47%, an additional $333 million, leading to the 34% growth in deposits. If you look at slide 12, which just looks at the balance sheet, you'll see that there's been a reduction in the liquid assets from bank placements and treasury bills, and then there's been a growth in the loan book. FCY loans and LCY loans, and then there's been a reduction in cash holding, which has also been channeled to growing the asset book. Apart from demand deposits, local currency demand deposits, all the other deposit products were up, and the decline you see from demand deposit perspective was due to utilization of balances from a trade perspective from customers. If you go to slide 13, which just shows a breakdown of gross earnings, and then you see the key drivers are FX, digital, account maintenance charge, which is a function of increased customer transactions and turnover, was also up 25%, and of course, interest income on liquid assets. Slide 14 just explains the decline in NIM. We had guided for 6 to 6.5. Obviously, more pressures from the yield on the loan book, which has come down between Q4 2018 and Q1 2019. What we've done this year is that from an asset perspective, we've largely achieved the loan growth for the year, and then we'll have a longer time to sweat the assets over the period, which will hopefully increase fund-based income in the coming quarters. On slide 15, you just see a breakdown of the operating expenses. The key drivers were staff cost depreciation and then NDIC and AMCON. Obviously, those two were driven by the larger balance sheet from 2018 and also the growth in the deposit book in the year under review. On slide 18, just a review of the funding base, and then if you look at it on a year-on-year basis, most of the lines are up apart from demand deposits. That decline of 0.2% is actually coming from the local currency book because the foreign currency book grew. And then slide 19 speaks about the deposit book itself. FCY deposits getting much closer to about 20% of the total book. It's now 19.2%. We've seen very strong growth in FCY deposits from two areas. Number one is from the retail segment after we introduced the near-instant transfers to foreign accounts from our domiciliary accounts. And then also we've seen from the oil and gas upstream segment, the increased oil prices has also been positive for our customers there. So deposits above a trillion, 80% of that is local currency, and about 19% of that is foreign currency. And then slide 20 just shows the retail deposit book. Quarter on quarter, it was up. Savings was up over 6%. We believe this year, again, we'll be able to achieve double-digit growth. It's getting closer to about 25% of the deposit base. We should benefit from the reduction in the MPR rate because the 0.5, the 50 basis points reduction directly translates to a reduction in our savings interest deposit rate, and that's about a quarter of the deposit book. Retail assets are beginning to pick up after a few quarters going down. Slight growth this quarter. We don't expect significant growth over the period, but you'll see it inching up gradually as we launch our digital lending products. Slide 21 just shows a breakdown of the liquid assets, and then you see it split between the treasury book, treasury bills, placement, and bonds. And the liquidity ratio is at 37.2, slightly down from 39% as we optimize the balance sheet further. Slide 22 shows a breakdown of the loan book. Now I'm just speaking about the key sectors driving the growth in the loan book. We are guided for 7.5 to 10%, and we'll still stick with that guidance. We're off the tracks early this year, a couple of trade transactions, and then some deals in the oil and gas manufacturing, and then the agric segment. If you look at the main sectors driving that growth, you look at oil and gas, you see
please go ahead.
Sorry, we lost you. Sorry, I'm back to slide 22. Just looking at the breakdown of the loan book and the sectors driving the growth. The largest sector there was manufacturing. So the gross loan books moved from 906 billion to about a trillion. Over 40% of our loan book is actually funded from intervention funds, debt securities, and long-term borrowings as opposed to a loan book funded strictly from the deposit base. Slide 23 just shows the quarterly trend of the loan book, and then it now shows the graphical picture. If you still look at it, there's still no sector contributing up to 20% of the loan book, but manufacturing is about 17%. That's about the highest sector now. Slide 24 just gives a detailed explanation on the key drivers of the loan book. Foreign currency loans are about 42% of the loan book now, and then local currency is about 58%. I've spoken about the key stores driving the growth in the loan book. Slide 25 speaks about the NPL. It's down from 5.7% to 4.9%. While the absolute decline was just 2.1%, the growth in the loan book by about 13% has been largely, you know, responsible for the marked decline in the NPL book. However, some of the sectors we've recorded a significant decline. For example, the transport segment is one of the loans we resolved in that sector, and then NPL book declined by almost 10% in that. Save for that, most of the NPL across the sectors have been constant. The main sectors contributing to the NPL still remains oil and gas downstream at about 22% of the book, transport at about 26%, and then manufacturing at about 18%. Capital adequacy is at 16.5%. In May, we will another 20% of the local currency bond will run off. So by the time we're publishing our H1 numbers, we believe the profits we're capitalizing from the H1 audit will more than compensate for that. So at 16.5%, we're fairly comfortable with the capital numbers. On the guidance, we're largely on track on the nine indices. It's basically on the NIM that we're behind target. We'll work on that this quarter and the coming quarters to optimize the yield on the asset book and try and see how we can improve the NIM. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. We will now be opening the line for questions. To ask a question, please press 0 on your phone pad. To cancel a request, please press 7. Okay. First question is for Jerry.
Yeah,
please go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. I have a number of questions to ask concerning your results. Firstly, you said you're still evaluating your balance sheet using the NIFX rate. So I'd like to know why you're still doing that. I expected that in 2019 we'll start valuing using the NIFX rate. Secondly, I want to know what the scope is for your NIM and your cost of funds. Above that, did you reprice your lending rates downwards? Because you said average lending rates declined during the period. So I want to know if you reprice them downwards, and also if you also reprice some of your term deposits. I mean, why are we seeing the pressure coming from that particular space, especially on your funding costs? And then what's the scope also for that? Thirdly, for your NPL guidance, so you said you're guiding at around 6%. So what's driving that particular guidance, given current levels of, you know, below the regulatory limit at the moment? Thank you.
We're marking the balance sheet using that. We explained on our full year call that that was more reflective of the. In terms of NIM, are we guided for 6? The new assets we've created during the year, some have been from on-lending transactions, some have been from the foreign currency book. That has reduced the average yield on the asset book. But we're not yet revising our forecast for NIM. We believe we can still achieve the 6%. Did we reprice loans downwards? In certain instances, we've had to do some repricing over the last quarter and early this quarter from an obligor-specific perspective. In terms of the time deposit book, what's driving that? If you'd noticed, between the end of the last quarter last year, the rates were already going up in the market in terms of the fixed income rate, which obviously mirrored the rates we pay on the time deposit book. Now, we've seen a moderation in rates, but it also depends on the maturity profile of the deposits you have on that book. However, we expect to benefit from a lower interest rate environment coming down into Q2 and Q3. In terms of the NPL guidance, like I said, what we guided for below 6%, a lot of the decline in the NPL book has been driven by the absolute growth in the loan book and not an absolute decline in the NPL.
Thank you. The next question is from Matthias, CB Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for taking my question. So I saw on your balance sheet the big transfer from stage 2 loans to stage 1 loans. Just want to understand what is the basis of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so obviously from an obligor perspective, there's been an improvement for some of the obligors. And then also from the new loans we've booked this year, we'll see a growth in those that are stage 1. But we've seen an improvement in some of the obligors, and also from a stage 3 book, we've also seen an improvement in one or two of the obligors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Emmanuel. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. So I have a number of questions here. So the first question is on the loan growth. So I'm quite impressed with 14% loan growth in Q1. So I want to know what's the nature of these loans, like what's the proportion of the online facilities and other classification of these loans. And secondly, given the present situation in the downstream sector, are you comfortable with the additional exposure you are getting on the downstream sectors? And then the third question I'll be asking is, historically, what's been the proportion of FX trading income to overall FX gains? Thanks.
Okay, thank you. On the loan growth, we want to know the nature of the on-lending facilities. Well, we have two types of on-lending facility, mainly to the real sector, where the first type is funds that we take at about 3% and on lend them at about 9%, between 3 and 4%, then we lend them at 9%. Others come from providers who lend directly to our customers that will provide a guarantee and charge a 1% fee. The risk in downstream sector and why we keep lending there, we actually took a position long ago to handle only confirmed off-taker arrangements on the downstream sector. So we developed a product paper. Our acceptance criteria for that segment is quite stringent. And that's why we've been successful so far, apart from a one-off situation we had about a year or so ago. So we are comfortable lending to that sector under clearly defined risk acceptance criteria via a product paper.
FX. Okay, so in terms of the FX income, on an annualized basis, it comes to about 60-40 between the valuation book and the trading book.
Thank you. Next question is from Bolan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. So I've got a couple of questions, and the first is, with regards to your non-performing loan, I would like to know, do you have any non-performing loan in the power sector that is yet to be classified? That's the first one. Then secondly, with regards to the study groups you saw in your deposits, I think I would like to commend the management for hitting the 1 trillion mark. But then more importantly, I observed there was a significant jump in your domiciliary deposits by about 97%. So I'd like to ask what drove that growth, and do you think it is sustainable going into Q2, Q3, and in Q2 and Q3? And with regards to your lending rate, you said the moderation in MPR should support lower lending going forward. So I would like to ask about your average lending rates comparing Q4 and, of course, Q1 2019. So that will be all for now.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll start with the power sector loans. We don't have any loans in stage three there. So what you see on our presentation as the NPL book are the loans we have under stage three. So we don't have any of the loans in stage three. But we have some of the loans that are classified in stage two. And then if you look at the coverage ratio we have under stage two, it's almost about 10%. That's about the coverage ratio we have under stage two. But we don't have any in stage three. The other questions on deposits, Namdi will take that.
Okay, thank you. In my opening remarks, I did mention some facts about the growth in deposits. If you realize savings alone, we've been growing double digit in the last 5 years, and now it's continuing. So these, most of these deposits are low cost, and they come from savings, current account, and domiciliary accounts. You were right when you talked about the increase in domiciliary deposits. We also we have upstream customers whose fortunes were improved by the improving oil price. So definitely, we saw a lot more inflows from that segment, which contributed. Finally, some of our retail products is also driving deposits. For instance, the currency transfer product using mobile phones is driving increase in domiciliary deposits as well, because you could actually remit monies abroad using your mobile phone. So it's convenient, just the way you do local transfers. We've seen that also helping to drive low-cost deposits. It's a new product we introduced sometime about third quarter last year, but the adoption has been increasing. So what are we looking at? We are looking at continuing this trend, and we think we would meet our deposit growth targets, going by what we are seeing so far.
Then the question you asked is the decline in the lending rate. So average lending rates dropped by 80 basis points between full year and Q1 2019. And that was one of the key drivers for the decline in NIM coupled with the increase in the funding cost. Thank you.
Next question is from Jerry. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so thanks for taking my question. As a follow-up to the questions that I asked before, I'd like to know what your target CASA ratio is. Yes, your target low-cost deposits, total deposit ratio. What's your preferred area where you want to play at? And then, secondly, regarding the loan growth, you said initially that you had certain obligors that you lended to at lower rates. So is it safe to say that that's the major reason why we're seeing this huge jump in loan growth, 13.7%? Is it because you had to reduce your rates and so you get in a lot of people coming to take these loans? Is it safe to say that's just the case? And then are you comfortable at this level, so will you still be aggressive going into the next quarters? Will you still be aggressive in pursuing loan creation? And thirdly, again, I'd like to know what proportion of your current loan book are non-investment grade as well. You know, yeah, I think those are my questions for now. Thank you.
And Thank you once again. On the lending rate, increase in loan book, whereas net interest income increased by just 0.2%. If you recall at our last call, we had mentioned that we'll be depending on increased earning asset base to grow our interest income. That was because we anticipated that we're going to drop rates, especially for the upmarket customers, corporate banking customers mainly. Of course, what you lose from that will make up from value chain opportunities, and you see those reflecting in our low-cost deposits because their value chain counterparties will naturally increase either deposits with us and so on. So it was deliberate strategy to make sure that we retain our corporate end customers while also building up the lower phase. On projections for CASA, we are guiding for minimum of 75%. And then finally, I think that's it. What, there was another question? I think, Jerry, that would be it for your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is for Tunde. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Tunde Abibe. Apologies for joining the call late, just in case you've answered some of the questions. My first question is on your non-interest income. It grew very strongly in here. What kind of growth trend should we expect to see going forward? Or if I put it another way, if you look at your non-interest income over the last 3 or 4 years, it typically goes up in Q2 before taking down in Q3. Is this trend likely to be the case going forward? And just as I joined the call, I thought I heard you say that you don't have any loans in stage 3 right now. Is that correct? Then the third question, your loan loss provisions increased significantly by about 47% year on year to 1 billion. Can you provide some call as to what drove this, given that this is a departure from what we've seen from the other bank? That's all for now.
Okay, thank you. For the line wasn't very clear. I tried to pick out everything. Non-interest income, yeah, very strong growth in Q1. Should we expect the same trend? Yes, we're going to expect the same trend for some of the lines, but not for all the lines. But overall, we don't expect, from a total revenue perspective, for there to be a decline in Q2. If you look at FX income was up very strongly, and then digital banking income was also up. We don't expect to have a decline from a digital income perspective. Depending on where the NIFX rate ends in H1, there could be one or two variations from a revaluation perspective, but from a trading perspective, we don't expect that. In terms of power sector, if I had you, what I said is that we don't yet have any loans in stage 3, so what we report from our NPL perspective are the loans we have in stage 3. But we've got loans in stage 2. What's driving the increase in impairment, which is different from what you've seen across the sector? Obviously, we all have different loan books, and if you look at the obligors across, they're quite different. We've increased the impairments we have across the stage 2 group. If you look at the coverage ratio across the stage 3, there was not much difference. I think it actually came down slightly between full year and Q1. But for the other stages, you see an increase. So this year, we guided for a cost of risk of not more than 1.25%. So if you look at the impairment numbers we have for Q1, which is 1 billion, it's still below what we guided, even though it's significantly higher than what we had in Q1 2018. Thank you.
Next question is for Tuyosi. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thank you very much for hosting the call. So I just have one question, and that's for more color on your OPEX line. So costs were down this quarter. I wanted to ask how you see this line evolving in the subsequent reporting periods for the bank. Thank you.
Okay, so on a quarter-on-quarter basis, the costs were down, even though it was up on a year-on-year basis. Like we had said in our press release, we expect the pace of the increase to decline. If there's any area where we see significantly increased spend going forward this year, it will be from a brand advertising perspective, and then a bit from a digital banking perspective, which will impact the technology cost. Save for that, we don't see any of the lines having a very significant material growth of double digits or anything like that. Thank you.
Next question is from Aziz. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity. I just want to find out, what is the major driver behind the increase in interest expense on debt issued and other borrowed funds? Because I saw that it increased by 14.16% year on year.
So if you look at the previous year, you look at the current year, after this time, Q1 2018, the balance sheet translation rate was still below, it was about 333, thereabout. Recall that we changed the balance sheet translation rate in the last quarter to the NIFEX rate, which was about 359, 360. So last year, we were converting the interest expense on the foreign currency deposits at 333 range. This year, we're doing at about 360. Now, if you look at the fact that we have a $400 million euro bond, and then you look at our long-term borrowings. Secondly, as at this time last year, Q1, the interest rate on the deposits, there has not been any change from a rate perspective. What has really moved this has been more the currency conversion perspective and then higher volumes from long-term borrowings. But in terms of debt securities issued, we actually had a slightly higher volume last year because as of this time last year, we're just repaying the balance of the Eurobond in May. So it's basically more from a currency conversion rate and not from the repricing of those deposits because some of them are fixed rates like the Eurobond. Thank you.
Hello, your next question is from Emmanuel Adeleke. Please go ahead. Emmanuel, your lines are muted. Please go ahead.
Once again, to ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad or 7 to cancel your question request. Thank you. There are no questions at this time. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for participating in this call. We'll return to our desk and continue to drive our strategies and stay focused on achieving the guidance for the year. So we look forward to seeing you at our next call. Thank you very much.
That concludes today's call. Thank you.